The Liberal Vannon Party held its final monthly meeting in mid-May, with brownfield development the topic for discussion. Dane Harrop, Managing Director of the Manx Development Corporation, was the guest speaker, and he joins me now to explain how his organisation is meeting government's remit to develop brownfield sites across the island.
So we were set up in 2021. I think we were incorporated in March of 21. It was Tim Wald approved, I think, in the November of the previous year in 2020. And basically, we're here to be a catalyst, really, for regeneration and, in I suppose, in its simplest kind of terms, move along the sites and the government-owned sites that have been sat empty or derelict for a long period of time, basically giving the government a development arm to allow that redevelopment to take place. And it's hoped that following the work that we do, it will be a catalyst and to hopefully allow further regeneration from private developers. And hopefully we're here to kind of try and unlock some of the issues around why development does take so long and is stalled.
And it does seem to be particularly difficult for government to develop sites. And it's not easy, this, is it?
It's not. You know, development does take a long period of time. I often say to people, if something takes 2 to 3 years on site, it probably takes as much in the pre-construction, you know, doing drawings, doing surveys, getting funding, understanding the site, managing those risks. So it actually, when we turn up and we stick a bucket in the ground on day one, you're actually only halfway through the process. But as you've outlined, you know, there's been a number of sites that have been empty for a long, long period of time. You know, and whether that's those have not happened for funding reasons, whether it's technicalities in terms of what they've found, or whether it's just the time wasn't right for those sites to be developed. Hopefully we can start to unlock some of those. And, you know, we're on site already at the nurses' home, which was a great first project for us to start on. And I'll expand on as we go through.
First question would be, why do we need an arm's length company to do this? Surely to goodness, government has enough staff that it could just crack on and sort this problem out itself without having all this additional bureaucracy.
Well, I don't know whether it's additional bureaucracy. You could argue an arm's length organisation gives the opportunity to make things a bit leaner, to be honest. It also allows us to operate slightly differently. As you say, you know, we don't follow the same rules as the government departments do. We have our own policies. They have been approved by the Treasury and by government. So, you know, we're not here just sat cracking on doing what we want. It also gives us opportunities to fund things differently, also potentially enter into joint ventures with other private developers or private parties. So it gives us a bit more agility, I'll say, to maybe unlock some of these sites, as we've said. You know, as you said, Phil, you were in infrastructure for a long time, and arguably your day-to-day work comes first. You know, there's always people, I would imagine, on the phone saying this isn't working or that's broken or something like that. I'd imagine it's a very difficult job, and actually looking strategically at bigger projects and projects that can maybe do take a long time in the planning, maybe haven't had the same kind of level of focus, you know, because like I say, there's an urgency to get some of these things that are literally people are banging the door down to say I need them solving now. So maybe they haven't had the attention that they deserve.
What was the sort of the core message that you had for the Liberal Vannon Party meeting?
I think the core message really is, you know, we're progressing well. The nurses' home is well on. You know, I highlighted some nice progress shots there where we've got large bits of steel coming out the roof now, which is creating the fifth floor, which is the additional story that we're adding onto the nurses' home. Internally now we're plastering. So, you know, quarter one of next year, that project will be complete, and hopefully everyone will see it in its glory and show what we can do, actually. You know, so it's great to have something there as a shop window for ourselves. Obviously it's been a shop window covered in scaffold for the last couple of years, but you know, development does take time. So, you know, talked really about the update on that project.
And of course this is crucial for the whole believability of what you're about is to actually deliver something. It's all well and good having worthy and warm ambition and objectives, but actually delivering something is you know, that's the seeing is believing thing, isn't it?
Completely. You know, we've had some really good images of that project that we've that was up at the at the first government conference. I think it was seemed to be on every presentation that was going, and actually to see it complete in the next, you know, in the next 6 to 8 months will be great for us. You know, because as you say, there's been a lot of press around what we're looking to do. And there's been a lot of projects over the years that have had nice images, but we've never actually seen them come to fruition. So for us, you know, when we see that project complete in the first quarter of next year, there'll be no prouder person than myself sat here. And further to that meeting, you know, really the nurses' home is seen as phase one of the wider redevelopment of the Westmoreland Road area with our Westmoreland Village project, you know, and that's progressing now. We've had a successful planning committee back in February. As I've outlined at the meeting, we're still currently with the AGs working through the legal elements before that becomes a formal approval, but we're hopeful that once that formal approval comes through, we can start cracking on and again making a difference up there.
And what you're planning for the Westmoreland Road area, is it the Westmoreland Road Village, I think you call it, is that right?
Yeah, we've called it Westmoreland Village. Yeah. You know, it could have been called something different, but you know, we felt that was a fitting kind of name for it.
The concepts actually look really good, and
thank you.
And I suppose people may wonder, well, a house is a house and surely that's all there is to it, but actually you're looking at the living space, the community space that's part of a place where you live, and perhaps the Isle of Man, because of the way it's developed over centuries, doesn't have enough of that, particularly what we would expect in a modern world.
Yeah, I think we've used what's called the 20-minute neighbourhood principles, which basically means that you should be able to get everything you need within it's actually a 10-minute walk out and a 10-minute walk back. You know, the more we looked at Westmoreland Village site as we were developing it, to be honest, the more that there was, I'll say, an embarrassment of riches. You know, you've got sports facilities right next to it in terms of the bowling basketball court. You've got a health centre on the doorstep. You have a primary school across the road. You've got a secondary school within, you know, 5-minute walk. You're about a 6 or 7 minute walk from Athol Street. You've got the terrace where you've got shops. But what we're looking to do is also provide some small shops. So again, that provides places for people to go, but it also provides employment. We've got an office block in the old Jane Crookall building. And then we've got a range of 1 and 2 bed apartments, 3-bed townhouses, and a senior living block, which will be taken by Douglas Borough Council to allow them to release some of their family houses that they've got, and relocate some of their people within those houses. And at the heart of it, you've still got that Scout Hall, which will become a great community facility. And then again, that's all intertwined with some high quality landscape. And I think one thing that the project does do is bookended is two old but quite iconic buildings for the Isle of Man, the nurses' home that we obviously will be coming to a close in early next year, but the Jane Crookall, you know, maybe architecturally a lot of people look at that and go, well, why are you retaining that building? But it's got a lot of history for that, for the Isle of Man. You know, for me it was quite interesting last year taking a tour around there. I was like, well, I have been here, but it was 43 years ago when I was born, and there's a lot of us that were born there. So actually, you know, there's a lot of research around existing buildings. You know, they say the most sustainable building is the building that's already built. Well, we're giving it a new lease of life, and again, that history around the Isle of Man and what it has done for the Isle of Man is quite important as well.
Of course, one of the great drivers of the age in which we live is to try and make buildings more energy efficient than they perhaps have been, and old buildings, that's quite a hard thing sometimes to do to retrofit energy saving features into those. That all adds to the expense, I presume.
It does. When we first started the nurses' home, we were in the middle of a financial crisis. Building materials had gone through the roof. It was, you know, fairly well out there in the press how much timber and plasterboard and all these things were costing. So actually it was a great building to start on because it actually reduced the need for the amount of materials that we required for building a new building. The fact that it would have jumped to the top of the registered building list if I said I was going to knock it down was also a big, you know, a big driver. But what we've done on that building is we've recognised what it's got, what its assets are, and they are, it's still a, it's a solidly built brick and concrete building. What we have done is considerably improve the envelope of the building by re-insulating from the inside. We've put in high-performing windows that are all sealed and airtight. We've then done, it's all electric apartments, and the new build elements on the top have all got air source heat pumps, and it's supplemented with solar photovoltaics on the roof. So we've made that as energy efficient really as an existing building as it can be. It will be the first BREEAM refurb building on the Isle of Man, which is an environmental assessment method that's internationally renowned. You know, so we've gone through a process there to really, really improve that building and make it as energy efficient as possible. And then leading on to Westmoreland Village, we've used those principles in the new build elements. So we've got highly efficient envelopes. So we're really reducing the need for energy. It's all electrically based. It's all air source heat pumps and photovoltaics. And it's an important part of making sure that we've got a sustainable island for the future, but also providing people with energy efficient homes. But as you say, it doesn't come cheap. It's expensive. Everybody wants the green bells and whistles. But yeah, it's not a cheap thing to do.
And of course, the other thing that defines the age in which we live is a scarcity of money. And people will look at the millions that Manx Development Corporation is spending and say, well, isn't that taxpayers' money? Are we just spending this money and never to see it ever again?
No, I think you've got to look at the Manx Development Corporation quite differently to what you maybe look at capital projects. So we're a developer ultimately, and we've got to make a return to our shareholder. There's elements of a return that are, you know, we're bringing sites that have been empty for a long time into use, and then that has a knock-on effect in terms of other sites that may well come to bear, I suppose, from private developers. But yeah, it does. It costs, you know, cost to build these days is high. You know, we have access to a revolving credit facility through Lloyds Bank that's funding the majority of our projects. But ultimately, they're all underpinned by a business case. And that business case shows a return to the shareholder. It is over a number of years. There's a reason that some of these sites have been empty for so long. To private developers, they don't make this type of returns that they're looking for. So the government haven't been had their doors beaten down saying, can I have this site? So arguably one of the main reasons we were created was to unlock that. Like I say, and we can look at things differently in terms of how we fund these. But ultimately, there is a return at the end of the day. So we've got a business case. It's been checked by Treasury. It's then been independently checked by third parties and verified. And, you know, we are here to develop, and we might have to take a long-term view on that. It might be across 15 to 20 years, and we retain the asset and rent it. In some instances, we may sell it. But again, each site is different. We need to understand what the constraints are, price those in, make sure that they are covered. You know, and our budgets, they do flex, you know, and we may well sometimes actually want to increase our budget because it may show a better return if we add something into a project. And that's what we're about, is about making a return. Whereas a capital project, you know, the promenade or something like that, it's very much, you know, once it's spent, it is an asset for the island, but it's not going to make a financial return. So we're different in that way. And I think that's one thing that maybe people don't fully understand about what we're about and how we're structured. But there is that business case and return at the back of it.
I get a bit twitchy whenever the promenade is mentioned, thanks to my previous role. But one of the things that developing sites, I mean, actually the promenade, let's use that as an example. One of the things that we know is that when you develop areas and make assets look substantially better than they were, that does have a knock-on effect on the local economy in the area. People are more inclined to go to places that look nice and that work than if they're looking very shabby and dated, possibly from the a century or more ago. Presumably, the benefits are more than just the financial return that Treasury ultimately is going to get on this.
Of course they are. You know, ultimately, yes, the business case arguably runs through the figures, you know, when there's a bottom line and there's a, you know, there's a return there. But as you say, there's the social benefit, there's the environmental benefit. As you say, there's going to be more people going to those types of places. You know, my previous role before I came back to the island in 2020, I worked for a large contractor in the UK. I was involved in a number of schemes where we built like new and large capital projects. And then from that, the catalyst has been that that area has been regenerated. I worked on the Story House Theatre in Chester, which was a major redevelopment in Chester. There was basically a quarter of Chester town centre was quite dilapidated and derelict. Once that building was opened, they had over a million visitors in its first year. And then since then, they knocked down a big chunk of the old infrastructure market hall. That's been redeveloped and is thriving now. But arguably that catalyst was that first building. And sometimes it takes, you know, takes a bit of a leap of faith sometimes to say, let's do it, let's build that building, you know, and then hopefully from that it's, you know, the ripple effect, I think the term would be. But, you know, take the nurses' home as an example. That was a building that's been sat there for a number of years. We're converting it into 37 apartments. That's 37 more apartments that are paying rates. People around the area using the shops, using restaurants, you know, commercial unit on the ground floor. So it all brings, like you say, an improvement to the area, and hopefully it has that catalyst to improve a wider area.
Okay, so we've got the nurse's home on its way. We can see the finishing line for that. The Westmorland Village is the next project. How many projects can the Manx Development Corporation take on at any time? I mean, is it just one project at a time, or are you hoping that it can develop to more than that?
Yeah, we've got multiple projects in the office at differing stages. Obviously, we've got, you know, the nurses home on site, as you say, Westmorland. We've had a successful planning committee meeting and hopeful we'll be soon starting on site there. You know, it's been in the press that we're looking in terms of development down at the Parade Street East car park, which is one that's currently progressing. And then there's a number of other sites that we've looked at and are all at differing stages. So when I first started in this role, the prime kind of brownfield site was that we always use as an example was Summerland. We've undertaken a number of surveys on Summerland. You know, there's no secret behind that. We had people abseiling down the cliff to fully understand what work needed to be done. Again, and that's about, you know, understanding the sites, trying to assess what the risks are, so then you can either mitigate them, include for them, and price them in, so you're making sure that you're getting your number as robust as possible. So again, we've done the surveys on that currently we haven't progressed that any further. And it's probably worth outlining how the Manx Development Corporation, what projects they look at and what we're given the kind of green light to do. So we have what's called the Brownfield Regeneration Steering Group, which is the only subcommittee of COMIN that has the Treasury Minister, Cabinet Minister and Department for Enterprise Minister on the steering group. And ultimately, we have been asked to look at a number of sites. We look at feasibilities, we present that to that steering group, and they approve at various gateways us moving forward to the point where hopefully we get onto site and we get a bucket in the ground. So yes, we can, in answer to the first kind of question, how many can we take on? Well, quite a large number, I think. You know, we're quite an agile team. We're not employing architects in-house. We go out and we procure those from the supply chain. So again, we can be quite lean. You know, we're only four in the office at the moment, managing a varied number of projects. But then we have a number of professional teams around us supporting us on those projects.
Well, you've mentioned the Summerland site. What are the obstacles to the development of that site? Because I'm guessing a lot of people would think, you know, the reason it was developed as a tourist site in the first place is because it's got a beautiful view across Douglas Bay. Mm-hmm. It's a great location. So why is nothing happening on that?
There's a number of sites, you know, in terms of the size and scale of them that demand large projects, and as we've outlined, large projects come with a large expense. At the moment, we've outlined what the risks are. You know, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to drive past that site and understand what those risks are. Obviously, the cliff that's still got a good proportion of the aquadrome still on the side of it is there. You know, we've got made ground that we'd have to deal with, and it kind of links in well to the increasing costs that brownfield sites present themselves with. So, you know, most brownfield sites are normally on what's called made ground, so basically old buildings that have been demolished and put into and crushed into the ground. That often means that when you come to rebuild on that land, that you can't 100% know what's underneath. So you'd have to potentially pile, and I think just outside this window we can see a piling rig sat there doing the extension to the Edward Pier. But again, there's no piling contractors on the Isle of Man. There's no ground remediation contractors that can deal with nasties in the ground. And the specialists that elements that we don't have on the island, granted, it's because there isn't the work maybe all the time. But what that does do is it increases the costs of what you would normally expect, you know, an average build to be because of the issues that you may well come across. So I think, you know, there's a lot of complexities around Summerland. We know the history around the site as well. And I think anything that is proposed there needs to be carefully considered.
This is, though, a long-term project. We're not going to wake up in a couple of years' time and see the whole of Douglas transformed. We're possibly talking a decade or more before we'll see a dramatic difference in Douglas.
I think you're probably not far off, you know, as I've said, even just doing surveys and design work takes a long period of time. Then we're into planning, we're into building regs approval. All those things add onto the timeline. And then once you're on site, you know, it's getting the. We often hear about issues with labour, issues with supply chain, things like that. So actually, the availability of labour is quite a critical element. But construction takes a long time anyway. It's not, you know, things don't appear out of nowhere. I think one thing that, you know, the Isle of Man does have going for it is that the industry's changing, particularly in the UK. There's a thing called, they call it modern methods of construction. So a lot of people call it modular. Now, modular can have various different kind of applications. You can see it where it comes on the back of a wagon and the building's almost finished inside. It's painted, it's got the cables down the wall, you know, and it bolts together and creates a building. That's one type of modular. Or it can come, I'll say, IKEA flat pack. So what I think the Isle of Man needs to maybe do is some of these large projects, we need to look at it differently in terms of how we deliver them. You know, we do have an issue in terms of the amount of labour that we've got, purely because we are a small island that only has a limited number of people. But I think the industry has really risen to the challenge in terms of how it can deliver and how it can deliver things efficiently and to a better quality. So things are finished in a factory, they come to site and they're bolted together, and we're not reliant on good weather, you know, it can be done quickly. So I think things like that can be something that we can actually major on, and it's something that we are looking at to try and deliver some of these things. Pounds per square metre, they might be a bit more expensive than a traditional build, but if I'm finishing something a year earlier, then people are in using a facility or living in a home a year earlier, so that can only be a benefit.
It is fair to say that following his presentation to the Liberal Vannon meeting, Dane Harrop from the Manx Development Corporation received a lengthy and at times quite heated series of questions from an audience which was at best sceptical of the corporation's tactics and its ability to succeed. Let me know what you think by contacting Phil Gorn at manxradio.com and get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast on Manx Radio's website. For now, though, I'm Phil Gorn. Goramayu. Thanks for listening.